So I'm going to talk a little bit about the rules tonight. All the candidates, all the speakers have heard this, but I want everybody else to understand. We'll have two panelists for each side, and they must share their time. Their introductory remarks are going to be 7 minutes long. And when that 7 minutes is up, Sophia is going to silence your mic. Rebuttals will be 3 minutes each side. And then after we get through, each side has a chance to give a rebuttal, then we'll take questions. We received a bunch of questions on the website when you're registered, so we're going to go through those first. If we have time, we will get some of the questions from the chat. So you can post a question in the chat function. I see we have two of them already. I want to say that generally we're going to let the anti-recall side respond first to each question, but I may switch it up a little bit depending on the question or if that format gets a little boring. I want to thank very much Commissioner Fauga Moliga for joining us tonight. The other two school board members, Allison Collins and Gabriela Lopez, did not respond to our numerous requests to debate. Their campaign did initially identify a speaker, but he bowed out later without naming a substitute. So we understand that Commissioner Moliga may only want to defend himself against the recall and not talk about the other two school board members. That, of course, is his privilege. In addition to him, we also have speaking against the recall is Gaynor Siatana. And please feel free to correct me if I botch your name. I'm going to do it time and time again. I'm terrible at this. And on the pro side, Joel Engardio, I think I've got that pronunciation down. And Autumn Loyan on the pro recall side. Okay, thank you. We're going to start with the pro recall side. So Autumn and Joel, you have 7 minutes.
Thanks, Frank. Hi, I'm Joel Engardio, and I believe good public schools are essential for a city to thrive. The best cities make families a priority. And because the future of a city depends on investing in the next generation. And the first step is to have well-run public schools. That's why every resident should care about who is on the school board, whether you have kids or not, even if your kids are in private school. We all benefit from well-run public schools. It's in all of our interests to make San Francisco a family-friendly city. But we have one of the lowest percentages of children in the nation. It's been reported that San Francisco has more dogs than kids, and that's a problem. Our neighborhoods suffer when families leave San Francisco. Cost of housing and quality of life are big reasons families leave. Schools are also at the top of the list. If we can keep more families in San Francisco by fixing the public schools, we're going to have a better city. Unfortunately, San Francisco ranks among the worst school districts in California when it comes to the achievement gap facing Black and Latino students. A quarter of our kids attend private school, compared to only 9% in California. We have to attract families back to public schools, especially the working parents who are stretching themselves to pay for private tuition. There is something concrete that we can do to fix the schools right now. We have the opportunity to recall the school board and get better leadership. We have 7 school board members, and 3 were eligible for recall when we started the effort earlier this year. We should recall Commissioners Collins, Lopez, and Moliga because they failed at their job. They failed parents and students during the pandemic when we needed competent leadership the most. Commissioners Collins, Lopez, and Moliga all voted together on decisions that turned out to be disastrous for our schools. They delayed reopening schools, and this caused students to suffer from learning loss, isolation, and mental health stress for many months longer than necessary. They refused to hire a consultant to reopen the schools, which the superintendent said was, quote, a body blow. They wasted time and money renaming schools instead of reopening them, and they used a flawed system with 0 academic standards. The renaming committee didn't even know if Roosevelt Middle School was named for Teddy or FDR, so they eliminated both names. They ended merit-based admission at Lowell, one of the nation's best high schools. And they did this instead of reopening high schools or trying to make every high school one of the best in the nation. Then they drove our schools into a financial ditch. The deficit is so bad, the state says our school district is no longer fiscally solvent. Now we're facing the threat of a state takeover. And more families are pulling their kids out of our public schools. Declining enrollment means even less funding. We're in a vicious cycle to the bottom. But we can put on the brakes by recalling the school board. We're going to hear from Commissioner Maliga tonight. Keep in mind that he voted with Commissioners Collins and Lopez on every bad decision. It's also important to note that Commissioner Maliga was appointed to the job by Mayor London Breed, and even she is calling for him to be recalled. We can fix our schools with a better school board. Please recall all three commissioners on the ballot February 15th.
A lot of people wondering why this can't wait until the November 2022 election. And that's a great question. I would wonder that myself. So there are three problems that are coming to a head before the November election: superintendent, learning loss, and budget. So first, the superintendent. The board is looking for a new superintendent. Our current superintendent quit because this board was so difficult to work with. You can see this in his list of requirements to stay on an extra year. Not more salary and benefits like you'd expect, but request after request that the board do his job and stop interfering with his. That they come to meetings prepared. That they don't fire his people out from under him. That they focused on reopening schools until the kids came back. These are not normal requests a superintendent needs to make. Now we're looking for a new superintendent, and applications are due 2 weeks after the recall vote. We're worried that good candidates will not want to work with this board, and that this board is not the best place to choose the leader who will guide our district for the next 5 to 7 years. So that's the first reason this can't wait until November, because we need a good superintendent. Second reason is learning loss. They have no effective plan to address learning loss. I would like to see a plan that measures where our students are right now, has strategies to get kids caught up, and measures outcomes so that we know which strategies are working. The board has no plan, and this needs to be addressed fast. So that's another reason that this can't wait until November, because our kids are behind and they need help to catch up now. The third reason is the budget. We are looking at a $125 million structural budget deficit. That means every single year, $125 million in the hole. And even more if families continue to flee the district. The state has set a deadline of next week to come up with a realistic budget to solve that problem. And they're threatening to take over financial control of our district. That means we would have no say in how our money is spent, and we don't want that. The best way to solve our budget crisis is to give families confidence to come back to our district, because every child who returns brings their funding with them. We need solid leadership to make that happen. And based on their history, this board can't do it. Enrollment has dropped precipitously on their watch, and we hear from families that they are continuing to leave. So that's the third reason this cannot wait until November, because we are in a budget crisis right now, and we don't want to be taken over by the state. 69% of district parents support this recall. And we're here tonight asking you, please, please, recall Lopez, Collins, and Maliga to give all of our students a better future.
Okay, now the anti-recall side.
All right, thank you, Frank. Good evening, everyone. Talo for Malo Elele, Aloha, Bula Vinaka, that's in Hawaiian, Samoan, Tongan, Chamorro, and Fijian. It's really good to be here with you all tonight with my colleague, Sister Ganis Yatanga. We're both bred in this city, San Francisco. We love this city. Giants die hard, 49ers die hard. Win or loss, we were there with them. Been here since the earthquake in 89, and, you know, happy to be here tonight with you all. And so I prepared some words for you all. Thank you for the invitation. Myself and Gainer are going to go ahead and, you know, try to convey, you know, what we feel like is information that is important for you all to know tonight and to take away. So bear with us. So my name is Faunga Molinga. I am Vice President of the San Francisco Board of Education and an elected member of the San Francisco Democratic County Central Committee. I'm a native of San Francisco and the first Pacific Islander ever elected to the office in this city. I ask that you do not support the proponent's request. This attempt to recall me is unjustified. Arguments made by the proponents are false. Throughout 2020 and 2021, I called for public schools to open as soon as they were safe for students and staff because of mental health concerns. My focus before and during this pandemic has been on increasing enrollment, fiscal responsibility, and improving learning and health services for students, families, and staff. Through working collaboratively with stakeholders, I authored the coordinated care resolution that created a citywide wellness check system for public school students and families. This resolution was praised by the CDC. It's saving the district money during the budget shortfall, has become the core element of the middle school mental wellness redesign. I was a supporter of the Community Hubs initiative. I partnered with DCYF to open the hub at the Simon Community Development Center in Sunnydale Projects on the Southeast to ensure youth in Visitation Valley were included in the services being provided by the city. Although students have returned to school, this hub is still providing COVID relief and services to the community. I authored the Our Healing in Our Hands resolution that placed additional health workers and therapists in public schools prior to the pandemic, pioneered a peer-led program where students support fellow students. In addition to my focus on mental health, I authored resolutions to increase enrollment by opening the first enrollment center in the Southeast sector of San Francisco, upgraded transportation and mental health services that will save over $30 million over the next 5 years, expanding learning opportunities for Pacific Islanders students through the FASAMO initiative that includes the very first pre-K Samoan immersion program in the country, which has the highest enrollment in the San Francisco Unified School District today. And also passed a resolution to address the teacher housing shortage here in San Francisco. Last week at a forum co-hosted by the Eastern Neighborhood and Noe Valley Democratic Club, one of the proponents said, "My heart may be in the right place, but my policies have failed." I agree that my heart is in the right place, but I disagree that my policies have failed. They are a success. My legislative record shows that my work is improving in our public schools at a time when we are navigating through a pandemic. I will finish my statement with this. I hear people say it is an election season. It is not an election season. A recall is not a formal function of our democratic process. There are not any candidates to measure me against. This is a recall, and the bar for deciding if an elected official should be recalled is much higher. A voter has to decide if the elected official's actions warrant immediate removal and cannot wait until next general election. I committed no crime, broke no law. In my case, I've not done any to warrant immediate removal. Please join the San Francisco Democratic Party, United Educators of San Francisco, former state Senator Mark Leno, former supervisor David Campos, and many others in opposing my recall. Please vote no recall of myself, Faunga Molinga. And I'm gonna turn the floor over to my colleague, Gennar Siatanga, for the remainder of the 2 minutes.
Thank you, Commissioner. I'm very humbled to be here. Thank you guys all for the invite. My name is Gennar Siatanga. I'm a born and raised native of San Francisco, still here, never left, and a proud parent of a senior, also in SFUSD, and I being an alumni of SFUSD. I come to you tonight to say to please vote no on the recall of Molinga. Just to share with you real quick, our Pacific Islander community has been neglected for over 100 years of existence here, you know, and the first time we get someone in office who's representing us, who's representing our voice, who continues to work with us in the community, we have now been recognized. We have finally, you know, tomorrow we're cutting a ribbon, you know, for the first PI Hut Resource Center. Our status, you know, we had 50,000 people here in the 1980s, but due to gentrification and displacement, our numbers are about 10,000 now. You know, our dropout rate is 11.6%, 21.9%. So when folks are saying that they're actually here and they're representing, you know, and being the voice of marginalized or communities and those in disparities, we're right here and we don't know them. We've never heard of them. And so it's a highly hurtful thing. And we're very insulted and disrespected, you know. So with all that Molina has done, our commissioner, we have now been recognized. And now as we're voicing this, this is the first time we've come, you know, been included or feel inclusive, you know, in the school board, in this city. And now we just are so concerned that, and we feel unsafe that if we say anything and our commissioners stand up for what's right by the people, that they're being recalled. Again, please vote no on the recall of Commissioner Molina. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, we are now going into the rebuttal phase. Joel and Autumn, you have 3 minutes, and then Foga and Gaynor will have 3 minutes.
So I would agree with Commissioner Molina that the bar for recall is much higher, but we have already cleared that bar. 80,000 people from across the city have signed for this recall to be on the ballot. That is an incredibly difficult thing to do, and it has not been done in 38 years. It's important to remember that if you choose to recall Lopez and Collins, but not Commissioner Molina, you're voting for Molina to be president of the school board. Molina's heart may be in the right place, but he doesn't have the chops to solve the serious fiscal crisis that our district is facing. He was a member of the budget committee. He did nothing when our administration warned about the budget deficit over a year ago. He did nothing when the budget looked so bad the state sent in a financial advisor. He did nothing last month when the state advisor said, don't spend a single unnecessary penny. It all has to go to educate students. 1 hour later, Molina voted to pursue an appeal to remove the Washington murals. That is not a necessary expense, and that money represents teachers' jobs that could have been saved. On the other hand, he voted to not recover the $125,000 that our district spent fighting Allison Collins' frivolous $87 million lawsuit against our schools. Again, that money could have saved a teacher's job. To solve this budget crisis, we need strong, brave leadership that's ready for a hard conversation with the community, so families have confidence that they can return to our district. Molina has shown no interest in having the necessary hard conversations with his constituents. He still believes that turning down the reopening consultant in that first COVID summer was the right thing to do, even though that decision kept our middle and high school students home all year. And he wouldn't change any decisions he's made over the past 18 months, except perhaps improving distance learning. He says he was focused on reopening, but we were the last of the top 25 cities in the country to reopen fully. He says he created an enrollment center, but enrollment is down nearly 7%. He said he was a supporter of learning hubs, but zero school sites were made available for learning hubs. Now, I could be wrong. These could be successful initiatives, but that's not what success looks like to me. And I would like to see citations. Look, Molina isn't ready for the hard, nuanced conversations necessary to solve the budget crisis and bring families back. He doesn't have the chops for it. That's why I'm asking you to recall all three school board members, because our kids are counting on you to turn this district around.
Thank you. Okay, so the opponents of the recall have 3 minutes to respond. And after that, we're going to do question and answers. I see, Justin, you have your hand up. If you have a question, you can put it in the chat. Thank you. Next, go ahead. Yeah, 3 minutes.
Yeah, I just want to say, I'm not really too sure what school board the Autumn has been following. But based off of the facts and what has been recorded over the time I've been on the school board in terms of budgetary issues, right? When I got on the school board, I was on the budget committee. First thing they told us, you're going into a deficit, $70 million. $70 million deficit is going to climb over the next 3 years. What did I do? Check the facts, look at the records, tackled the transportation, the largest bill in the school district, which when I came on, they were having such a hard time doing. Nobody could do it, right? Nobody could do it. I did it, right? We did it, transformed the whole entire process. They're getting ready to save $25 million in the next 5 years because of that new transportation process that we created. In addition to that, that new transportation process also created an alignment within the school district. So now educators have an ability to have trainings all at the same time, which they've been trying to do for a very long time, right? Very long time, too, right? Because we keep going back to this budget thing. I knew the city wasn't going to give us any money, right? I knew they weren't going to give us any money. They kept saying, you need to deal with your own financial issues. What did I do? How much are we billing currently in San Francisco? Billing relates to mental health services. We were billing less than $1 million prior to me getting money on the school board. In the next 5 years, we're going to be billing at $5.5 million in terms of Medi-Cal expenses from the federal government, which we're not asking the city. We're creating it ourselves. And let me tell you this right now, isn't even costing us anything. Why? Because it's paying for itself, right? It's paying for itself. The two resolutions that I just explained to you both in terms of what I produce, it's addressing this structural deficit that has been accumulated in the school district since I got on the school board. And we're level setting and right fitting it so that we can get to a place where this school district is successful and be and able to provide services for all of our families in San Francisco. Mind you, the other piece around this with the budget is enrollment. Throughout the whole entire state, they're talking about enrollment. The governor, let's pray for him. Hopefully they step in to support NorCal all the way to SoCal when it comes to this enrollment. And when you talk about enrollment with Black and brown kids in this city, we've been pushed out. Let's have a real conversation.
Thank you. Okay, we are now going to some questions. So these questions were given to us when we first sent out registrations. And so I've got 19 questions, but I've condensed them down to about 8. So we'll see if this works. So this question, both of you can answer, but I'm gonna start with the anti-recall folks. What have the school board members done to improve the education of San Francisco students? So you have 2 minutes to respond, and we'll start with the folks who are against the recall. Commissioner Maliga.
I'm so sorry. I got a mix up. Can you ask that question one more time, Frank?
What have the board members done to improve the education of San Francisco students? You've addressed it a little bit. Give us some more, please.
Oh, yeah. I'll tell you what I've done. You know, when I first got on the school board, I'll tell you what I've done in the pandemic, and I'll tell you what I've done prior to the pandemic, right? And so during the pandemic, I created the Facile More Initiative, which I mentioned earlier, right? When you talk about indigenous people in this city, which have been neglected, you have to get real about the situation. You can't talk about academics without culture. When we built that Facile More Initiative, it rolled out the first pre-K Samoan dual language immersion program in the country, right? What is it? Is it the World News? Some big news company got wind of it, spread that thing all over the country. We're getting calls from Guam, New Zealand, American Samoa, Hawaii about this program that we're building. And again, let me remind you, when you talk about enrollment, it has the highest enrollment in San Francisco right now. Let's put that there, okay? When you talk about our city of San Francisco, which is very diverse, not everybody was being counted. So we're not even understanding the demographics of the kids in our city. I passed a data equity resolution, which now creates a more exhausted list, which includes more ethnic folks within our school district. So now you can go in there, you can find Fijians, Tongans, more Southeast Asians that are in our school district. And we created a system on the website where you can go and you can get a better understanding of where all these students are, so CBOs can actually come in and provide services for these folks. Remind you, I'm a social worker, right? So my main job is to locate, provide services, and help kids feel better.
Great, thank you. And the anti-recall folks, the pro-recall folks, you have 2 minutes.
So actually, can I, like, point of clarification, like, I feel like that question's really just directed to the other side and we don't really have any bearing on it. Is it okay if we just, like, agree to, like, when it's obviously directed to one side, that we just, like, skip the rebuttal?
Although
you can say whatever you want.
Okay. Actually, I have a point to make, because the question is, what did the school board do, right? And so if people watch school board meetings during the pandemic, you might have noticed that they stretched on for 6, 7, 8, 9 hours. And it might be 7 hours into the school board meeting before they even began talking about opening schools, when that was what the parents who were frustrated and exhausted and were begging for. But they talked about everything else but. So there's a lot of other stuff that they were working on, the renaming instead of reopening. You know, there's so many things they were doing that just was not in the scope of what they should have been doing in the middle of the pandemic. So they were derelict in their core duty, the core duty of safely reopening the schools.
Yeah, I guess I'll say we went through the records and there were 3 separate meetings that went on for 9 hours where reopening was not discussed until 7 hours in. We had some Latino families who wanted to speak at those meetings who took time off from work and were unable to speak because not only did they spend 9 hours of their time in this meeting, but they, in the end, were not chosen to speak because the public comment period was so short. That's really it makes it really difficult for the poorer members of our community to speak and be heard at these school board meetings.
Understood. Okay, the next question, and we'll start with Commissioner Maliga, is the opposite of this. Could you itemize, actually I'm gonna start with Joel and Autumn. Could you itemize the harm over the terms that these 3 commissioners have inflicted on the kids of San Francisco?
Sure. I think a lot of it comes down to focus. So they've failed to focus on reopening, which led to severe learning loss, especially for the most disadvantaged communities. If you look as early as October 2020, Pacifica Islander kids had suffered the highest learning loss of any community in San Francisco. Keeping the schools closed only makes that worse. They've also neglected the budget. One of the key duties of the board is to make sure that our district is fiscally solvent going forward. And we have things going on, like our board president saying she doesn't have the time or inclination to go through the budget line by line. That's her job. They also failed to reopen schools when all the other school districts in the country managed to do so. And when CDC data showed that students were actually safer in school than in the community at large, that in-school transmission was so low that it was safer for kids to be at school.
I think it's also important to note there are kind of 2 fatal flaws or fatal votes that happened. Just before the pandemic, the school board voted to fire some top level administrators that the superintendent really relied on. And then the pandemic hit and the superintendent did not have the people he needed, right, to deal with this crisis. And then midway through the pandemic, when the superintendent said, we need to hire a consultant to reopen schools, the school board said, no, we will not hire that consultant. And the superintendent said, this is a body blow. And it was a very prophetic statement because we all know what happened when they refused to hire that consultant. So ideology got in the way of actually helping the students, and the votes show that.
Okay, the other side has 2 minutes.
Frank, can you ask the question again?
Sure. The question was really directed to the other side, but you're allowed to respond. And that's, could you itemize the harm over their terms that these three commissioners have inflicted on the children of San Francisco?
Yeah, see this? I'm laughing.
It's a clear but biased question. I understand.
All right. I'll just respond based off of what I feel like is appropriate for tonight. And so, I grew up in the city, in the projects, right? I grew up in Hunters Point, Southeast Projects. I'm not sure if most of y'all been there, right? And so when the pandemic hit and Koufax came into the building, we had our private meeting. I told Koufax and everybody in that room, the people who are going to get hit the hardest in this pandemic are Black and Brown folks, Latinx, Pacific Islanders, and the Black folks, right? Why? Because they're the most under, when you talk about marginalization and disadvantage, they're the folks who are not receiving services today in the city. So when that hit, I got busy, right? Which is what I'm saying again. We rolled out that Facile More initiative, which during the pandemic created a Matua pack, which is a parent pack. Like 40, 50 Pacific Islander parents came virtually together, still moving the work forward in the school district. You can find that on the videos too. We built a tutoring program on the Southeast at Malcolm X with Chris Tosse, who's now in Hawaii taking care of his mother because she's sick. He moved, you know, we did a VASA conference with the junior colleges, San Francisco State Junior College, San Francisco State and SFUSD joined virtual to address the learning gap. I mean, come on now. So when you're talking about my people, we've been marginalized prior to this. We just got to the school board, which is why Gaynor is saying you're trying to recall the first Pacific Islander. And in this city, we've been marginalized the most. There have been more Samoan kids killed prior and in the pandemic through shootings than COVID-19. Who was at those funerals? Yours truly, Gaynor also. With these sad parents who are being killed, and no one's talking about that. More Samoan kids have died from violence during the pandemic, which has been occurring before that, than from COVID-19. So we want to leave it like that, okay?
Thank you. Okay, so we've had some questions about improving and harming. Now let's talk a little bit about, there are several questions about the process. So one question says, recall is the law. When elected officials violate their oath, why should voters give up their right to say enough? Another question is, why not respect the formal vote and wait till each of these candidates you don't like are up for another term? So I'm going to allow Commissioner Maliga, your side, to respond first.
Yeah, no, that's what I've been saying. Right. If you have an issue on policy issues that we've been voting on, whether it's the mirror, whether it's low, whether it's, you know, let's have the discussion at a general election like everybody else does. Right. But if you're talking about, you know, a recall, I've committed no crime. There's politicians in this city. You go check the records. They've done worse than I did. And they probably have some criminal history that you might need to go and check on themselves. But this person you're talking to right now, based off of the facts, based off of what you heard tonight, none of that, right? So like, again, if you wanna discuss things about the pandemic, what you're trying to, fine. I just laid out what I did during the pandemic, right? But if you wanna talk about policy issues, come on, San Francisco, right? I'm from the city. I've been voting here since I was 18. Let's take it to the ballots and let's do it how we always do. We go get your endorsements, we'll show up, you know, you say your piece, let the people vote. But this here today, in terms of a recall for myself, I can't speak for these other folks, right? Hold them to the fire. But for myself, here I am tonight, you guys, telling you, this is what I'm hearing from you guys, but I'm telling you that that's not true because this is what I've been doing, okay?
Great, thank you. Gaynor, did you want to jump in there? You have another 40 seconds, I think. No, okay.
I'm okay.
Okay, Joel and Autumn.
So there's an urgency as to why we can't wait till November. And we talked about that earlier. The two urgent issues are this current school board is going to hire the new superintendent because our superintendent is leaving. He wanted to leave last year because the job was untenable. And then he stayed But we can't have this current school board hire a new superintendent who's going to run things for the next 5 to 7 years. And that's going to happen before the November election. And the other issue is the budget. The state is coming and threatening that they're going to take over. We can't have this current school board driving things because they've been driving the district into the ditch. So those are urgency reasons as to why we need to act now. As far as democracy goes, 80,000 people signed each of the petitions. They're all San Francisco voters. The people were heard. The people are speaking. They're yelling and shouting that they want change.
I would also say that probably everyone in this call was in favor of impeaching Trump with 3 days left in his term. Recalls and impeachments are there for emergency measures. And we think this is an emergency when the state is about to take over our school district. We also expect that this election will have more people voting for school board than the election that chose these three commissioners, and a much more well-informed electorate who has a clear picture of exactly what these candidates stand for. We think it's a great expression of democracy that 80,000 people from across the entire city were willing to put their names down on a recall petition, which they always fail in San Francisco, okay? 80,000 people were willing to put their signature down on the street that they wanted these folks recalled. There's no requirement that the person commit a crime. All that's required is that enough voters think you're not doing your job.
Okay, great. Thank you very much. We have some more questions about process. Some of these may be a little naive, some may be useful. Can recalled members run again in the next election? Can they appeal the recall? If the school board members remain in office, what happens? And why aren't you recalling Mark Sanchez? So let's have the pro-recall folks speak to this first.
So first of all, we're not recalling Mark Sanchez because he wasn't eligible for recall at the time we started this process. Only Lopez, Collins, and Maliga were eligible. The others hadn't been in office long enough. Do you want to take the next?
Okay.
I forgot the rest of the question. Yeah,
the other questions are, can recalled members run again in the next election?
Yes,
can
absolutely.
They appeal the recall?
I don't know. I mean, I guess you can sue for anything, as evidenced by Allison Collins is suing the school board for $87 million. So I would imagine they could sue. But the way the process works is, once the election results are certified, I believe the mayor has 10 days to appoint new candidates. So there's probably a couple of weeks between the recall vote and having new people in place.
And it's important to note that this democratic process is such that whoever is recalled, whoever is appointed to replace who's recalled, all have the opportunity to face the voters again in November. So everyone's going to get another pass at this. You know, this is an emergency measure to take people out of the job who aren't doing the job, who are failing at their job. The mayor will get to appoint folks who are recalled, but that's not the end all be all. Those people who are appointed have to stand for election in November. The voters are going to get to have a say. So all this nonsense about, oh, it's mayor's control of the school board. It's not. The voters are going to have a say, and anyone can run for those seats come November.
I would also kind of say that in any job I've had, if I was doing a terrible job, I would get fired, you know, the next day. You know, they have had nearly a year since last February to improve their job performance. And the voters get to decide in February whether it's been enough. I think that's enough of a grace period.
Okay, now let's have the anti-recall side speak to this. Let me repeat the question. Can recall members run again in the next election? Can they appeal the recall? Why not recall Mark Sanchez?
Yeah, those seem like pretty straightforward questions. And I think, it was already answered. And in terms of Mark, well, you know, I can't speak for whoever is running recalls. I don't support recalls, right? So, you can run again in another election if that's what you choose to do.
Okay. There's one more question. Maybe somebody can answer it in 10 seconds or so, either side. If on election day a school board commissioner is recalled, is this effective immediately? Anybody know the answer to that?
Well, maybe we should have invited the Department of Elections to help facilitate some of these questions. I've been trying to figure that out myself.
Yeah. Okay. Nobody has that answer. I don't either.
Yeah, I'm not sure about that.
I mean, it seems to me that they have to certify the results of the election, so I can't see it happening immediately. Okay, the next question or series of questions, we got three questions about political party. The first one says, can opponents of the recall defend the record of the Board of Education members without making it a partisan issue? And then on the other side, somebody says, yes, well, let's make it a partisan issue. Why has the recall supporters joined hands with right-wing bigots in recalling our most equitable school board members ever? I flubbed that. Let me say that. Why have recall supporters joined hands with right-wing bigots in recalling our most equitable school board members ever? And then the final part of this is, San Francisco and recall signers are predominantly Democrats. Why are opponents focused on Republicans and not defending their own records? So I'm going to let the pro-recall folks speak to these three questions first.
Okay, so first of all, I don't think there are 80,000 bigots in San Francisco. I would be very, very surprised. The other thing I'll say is, I think this question comes because we talked to Glenn Beck early in the campaign. We talked to every media outlet who has reached out to us, and our message doesn't change. I personally thought that it was a very interesting experience to be on that particular show advocating for the right of a gay dad to be on the Parent Advisory Council, which was half empty at the time. I don't think that's a message that they hear very often. But we think everyone is allowed to care that kids get a good education, that kids can read, and that kids can do math, even algebra in eighth grade. I think it's very important to look at the effects that it has when we stop talking to people. As a society, we've decided that when we don't agree with someone, we should stop talking to someone and we should shame them. And I don't think that's worked out very well for us on a national level. I think it's very important to have conversations with people you disagree with, because that sharpens your thinking. It helps it. And so that's why we talk to everyone. We've talked to the New York Times. We've talked to student newspapers. We've talked to CNN. We've talked with Fox News. We've talked with every single media outlet who's reached out to us. And our message doesn't change.
And there's only 30,000 registered Republicans in San Francisco. So there can't be 80,000 Republicans who signed that recall petition. So it's just a nonsense argument that this is quote unquote right wing.
Yeah, this recall effort is supported by Democrats of every shade of blue, and also by Matt Gonzalez.
Matt Gonzalez supports this recall. Let's say that again. Matt Gonzalez, if you remember, he ran against Gavin Newsom in 2003 for mayor. Matt Gonzalez supports this recall.
Of the Green Party.
That's right.
Okay, time's up. And now the anti-recall side.
Yeah, I'm not really too sure how to respond to those questions, to be honest with you. But what I do want to say is the reason why I'm here tonight is to have a conversation with you all and to defend myself in this recall that is being proposed by the proponents here. And so I just want to say, you know, I've been on the board. I got on the board because I was going to, you know, went to a school board meeting, and the school board, they weren't talking about supporting Pacific Islander students, right? And at that time, I was the only Pacific Islander attending school board meetings. And so, you know, I told myself, well, I don't know if these people are listening to me, so I might as well just try to run for school board. And that's what I did, you know? So I understand when, like, parents are coming to school board meetings not feeling heard, because that was me. And what I did was I went and ran for school board, and now I'm on the school board. And since I've been on there, that's all I've been wanting to do, is making sure that we address the opportunity gap. That's been my biggest thing. One of the first resolutions I passed was around the opportunity gap to help schools that were getting, that were losing funding in the beginning of the school years because of, you know, that's just kind of been the history. And a lot of those schools were like in the Southeast, Malcolm X, you know, in the Mission, in Everett, you know, actually teamed up with the mayor and supervisors, and they helped, you know, support those efforts, right? And so even today, coming out of this, right, my main goal at the end of the day is to close that opportunity gap. Whether I get recalled or not recalled, that's exactly what I'm going to keep doing, right? And so I'm here today, tonight, just to let you guys all know, so you guys can hear from me, right? You can hear from me where I stand, right? Since I've been in leadership, the board has been stable, right? We haven't been passing or introducing resolution that's been chaotic, right? We've been showing leadership that's respectful to the public, hearing all parents. I'll talk to any parents, right? I'll talk to any parents. The decreasing the distance folks, when that thing happened with Seth Brenzo, sat down with them the next day and said, hey, we're all responsible for these parents. To their credit, we shook hands. We went out there, repurposed $100 million, which 14 of that is going to go into outdoor learning, right? But it's all about communication and relationship building, you know, and that's what I'm here today to do with you all.
Thank you very much. Okay, the next question is about Lowell. Actually, we got three or four questions about Lowell. I'll try to condense them. Please explain your position on Lowell's admission process. That really sums it up. And I'll let Commissioner Maliga speak to that.
Yeah, I'm more than happy. You know, more than happy to talk about the Lowell issue, right? Again, for me, like, the Lowell is a vote issue, right? And folks talk about, you know, it being, you know, brought to the board, you know, in a time where we're trying to refocus on schools. One, I have no control over the agenda during that time, right? So if you're presented with a resolution, you have to put a vote on, right? That's one. Two, general counsel informed me that the admissions policy is out of compliance and it is against, I lost Frank's face and it kind of threw me off, but that it's out of compliance and it's against California Ed Code, right? And so as a person who grew up, you know, people telling me I have to follow the law every day, I'm very, very serious when it comes to compliance, right? Very, very serious when it comes to compliance. That's what I vote against. I'm never, ever going to vote against something that comes in front of me that's going to put you out of compliance. Now it's coming back to the board. I had a conversation with the Lowell folks. And I say, hey, if you can get past this compliance issue, I'll help you out. But that's standing in your way right now. They'll tell you that. I had a conversation with them like 2 weeks ago, right? Very happy to work with folks, talk with people across the line, you know. But in terms of, see this soda thing, folks, that's a whole different conversation. In terms of Lowell, we want to keep it a very highly functional school. Again, I went to McAteer, you know, a lot of friends that went to Lowell, right? We can keep it a highly academic performance school, but it has to follow the law. No school, no person is above the law. And if we could do that, if you could show me, I got your back, right? But as it stands right now, based off my conversation with legal counsel, that just isn't the case right now, right? I just had a conversation with her the other day about it. I was like, is there any other way? Still the same way, you know, but I'm open to having a discussion with folks, if that's what folks want to do, right? But we have to follow the law, folks. Yeah.
Great, thank you. And the other side.
So I haven't been privy to the conversations between Maliga and his lawyer. I would hope to see that documented somewhere, but what I understand is that under the law as it stands, there is an exception for grandfathered in institutions like Lowell, where the students are allowed to be chosen on a merit basis. But I think the real shame here is not how we choose people for Lowell, but that there are so many people who are seeking out an excellent educational experience in our school district, and they're all competing for the small number of spots at this one high school. Why aren't there more Lowells? Why aren't there more spots for high achieving students who want an environment that will challenge them? You know, why are we all fighting over crumbs when we could just be baking more brownies? That's what I would like to know when it comes to Lowell.
Okay. Joel, were you speaking or your side is done?
We're done.
Okay, good. So we had a couple follow-up questions on Lowell. One is, why put a Band-Aid on the problem and destroy Lowell as a high academic achievement school instead of fixing the problem in K-8 schools? And then the second question is, how does the board justify stripping merit admissions from Lowell, but not from School of the Arts, SOTA? And so the anti-recall side, I'll allow you to speak to that first.
Yeah, again, folks, like I said, it's against the law. You prove me wrong, I got your back. But the legal advice that I'm getting, it's not in compliance, you guys. And we can't go about that. SOTA's a whole different topic, right? If you go, if you look through it, you know, it's a specialized, okay, so now we're going to get into education. It's a specialized school in its own terms because it's based off of, from what I'm hearing, right? Again, I'm not an attorney. I'm a clinical social worker. I deal with 5150s every day. I'm not an attorney, right? We can all clarify this with attorneys. If you're online tonight, help us out here, right? But from my understanding is SOTA is a specialized school because it qualifies under instruments. But the California Ed Code says you can't have admissions policies around grades, right? And low again, it doesn't qualify under a magnet nor special, which puts them in a situation which everyone is saying, well, you're just a regular school, right? But I get it, right? I'm from this city. Lowell's been outperforming schools throughout its time here in the city, right? And so how do we keep it the way it is? And it's a very special place, which is why currently on the school board, I'm pushing to have an inclusive and thorough process so that community members feel heard from all sides. It's not only about Black kids, not only about Latinx kids. It's about all the kids in that school, Asian kids, white kids, you know, Samoan kids, right? But we have to do our due diligence when it comes to issues like this as we get to go back and revisit this low conversation, right? As a school district, and that's what I'm doing, right? So again, in terms of following the law and being in compliance, trust me, me and the law growing up, it's been a really rough time being Samoan in the city growing up Pacific Island. So I'm gonna follow the law. And what I've been told is that admission policy is out of compliance, you guys. Again, prove me wrong. You show me the papers, you know, I'll sit down with you tomorrow. But until then, you know, that's just kind of where we stand, folks. We got to follow the law.
Great. Thank you. The next series of questions are about the budget. First question is, San Francisco Unified School District has a major budget problem, so much so that the state might take over decisions from the school board. How did that happen? And then we had some questions that said that you, Commissioner Maliga, were on the budget committee. And another question that says, well, what savings and spending cuts should have, actually, this is my question. What savings and spending cuts should have been made in 2020 during the pandemic when schools were not open? So, I'm going to go to the pro-recall side first on that, and then go to the anti-recall side. Talk about the budget. You have 2 minutes.
So I think in our view, we would have liked them to start having conversations with the community as soon as they knew there was a problem and start seeking the help of the experts that the state sent in. We're not experts on the budget. But we would like to see the school board members relying on the expertise that they have available to them.
And when you watch the school board meetings, like I encourage people to watch them or at least follow some folks who tweet about it, but you'll sense the tone when the state expert comes in and kind of lays down the law and says, hey, folks, you're in trouble. The school board just seems to be dithering around, but not really taking it seriously as far as like what really needs to happen. So it just doesn't instill a lot of confidence. I mean, you have two school board members with two different plans. It just feels like it's people all running around and not really knowing what's going on. But that state official is there to say, hey, focus, focus, focus. Otherwise, we're going to take over. So it feels very dire.
Okay, and the other side.
Yeah, that's why I really just encourage people to actually, you know, go back and actually watch the videos of the school board meetings, right? And you'll see that we've been addressing it. Like I told you, when I got on the school board, my first meeting, they told us we were in a budget deficit. So the conversation was available to the public since 2019 when I got on the school board, to the point where Rachel Norton, when she was on the board with me, she goes, and you know, when I got on board, I'm a newbie, right? I was like, okay. And Rachel turns, she goes, that number is really high. We need to put a moratorium on spending on resolutions. I remember I was right there with her, right? Number was like $70 million. It's been a public discussion on the school board which is why I really highly recommended Jenny Lamb to be the chair of that department, because she's been doing a really good job of managing all the way through. But it's a structural deficit. It's a structural deficit that's been accumulated. This kind of deficit, you don't just get, like, you know, within the last 3 years. It's been building up to where it's at today. So what we have to do now is we have to right set it, right? We have to level set it. And let me go back to, you know, this thing around, you know, the experts that's come in. Love them. My man, Elliot Duchon, great guy. I support him 100%. Watch the video from last night. That's why I'm kind of tired tonight, right? We're in a direction we're not going to get taken over by the state. Yeah, there might be some people on the school board, which is why I'm saying this is not a school board recall. This is literally an individual recall, right? Because all seven of us are not here, right? That's why I can't speak for none of those guys, right? But if you go back and watch the videos, which is recorded, who puts the pause on ideas that's going to get us to a point where the state's going to take over? One of them is talking to you right here tonight. Right, we have to listen to the experts. CDE is not playing with the school district. And on top of that, they're giving us expertise that is very valuable, right? And over, if you listen to the call from last night, I say that over and over, you guys. So this is not an isolated or uncommon issue, you guys. We've been having this conversation for a very long time, which is why I did the transportation and the Medi-Cal, got busy on that kind of stuff, right? So anyways, I know it's getting late. Frank, I just want to do a time check. I'm a little under the weather tonight, but I really wanted to be here with you all.
Thank you very much. I appreciate that. We're going to take questions from the chat, and we're going to do another 10 minutes. Is that acceptable to you, Commissioner?
I had 8 o'clock. We're at 8:03.
Okay, perhaps Gaynor can respond to some of these. Again, we'll just take a few from the chat. Dennis, go ahead.
I'm sorry, hesitating. The first question I line up were for Mr. Melinda. Let me ask the first one here. Mr. Melinda, how would you do things differently if you don't get recalled?
It's that to me is like a very interesting question, because I remember I was at a Democratic club and they asked me the same question. I was like, so am I getting judged based off of what I'm going to do in the future or what I'm being actually recalled for, right? What did I do during the time people are recalling me? So I can't really speak for what I'm about to do in the future, which to me seems a little kind of unfair, right? But what I will tell you is I'm going to continue doing what I've been doing on that school board, holding the line, driving policies that make sense to this school district, that addresses the budget deficit and that close the opportunity gap. I'm going to lead in a way in my head, right? Let me tell you this. I'm the vice president on this school board right now, right? The day I was voted in as the vice president, I got grilled by my colleague, grilled. People said, you were so calm. You just took it. They said, why didn't you say anything back, right? My response is, this school district and this city has had enough of chaos. What they need now is a person who's going to show leadership, right? Humility, respect, be able to listen and take the high road. That's exactly what I've been doing. A lot of that comes from being Samoan and being from my culture and being raised by Indigenous people, right? And I continue to do that moving into the future. I have a lot of faith that we're going to get into a direction and a path, continue to go into that path, where we're going to resolve this budget, which we're going to do, right? We're going to get a superintendent, which we've been doing. I was in San Diego meeting with a lot of people. A lot of people are excited to come to our school district. People want to come to San Francisco. I was like, oh, that's great. Make sure you apply, right? We're going to get a superintendent into the school district that understands our city, that knows how to work across the line with our mayor, our board of supervisors and people on this call. But the one thing I'm going to do is I'm going to continue to lead, and I promise you that.
Commissioner Moliga, thank you very, very, very much. Gaynor, if you can stay on to answer any of the questions, that would be great. Joel and Autumn, if you wanted to respond.
Do you want to go first?
Go ahead.
So I guess what I would say is, I've seen, if Malika was so concerned about the budget early on, I would have liked to see a little more fiscal responsibility in the resolutions he voted for. He voted for the renaming resolution at unknown cost to our schools, but other places that have done renaming, it has cost $100,000 per school to fully rename something. So at 44 schools, that's $4.4 million. That's a one-time cost. He also voted for a curriculum that was over $10 million annually to develop and staff it. At a time when, as a member of the budget committee, he should have known that we were facing this budget cliff coming up. And so adding to it seems like even if you're saving $5 million a year on transportation, you're more than doubling your savings in terms of this curriculum that you're trying to implement.
It's also important just to look back and look at the voting record, how many times that Commissioner Maliga voted with Commissioners Collins and Lopez, time after time. And that sets a track record. So that means something, because that's when we needed the leadership then. It's one thing to say, I'm going to lead, but where was the leadership when we had the crisis?
I'd also like to point out that this board has doubled the annual deficit. So they did inherit a structural deficit, but it has more than doubled under their watch. And that doesn't happen by accident. That happens because you're not paying attention to the finances.
Okay, thank you very much. Another question in the chat is, Commissioner Maliga is on the budget committee and has been for years. Can you please explain in simple language why the school district spent beyond its means for years and is now in crisis?
I think I've already answered that question. Well, we're in a structural deficit. And just for the record, I was on the budget committee the first year that I was on the school board, right? We have an enrollment decline, you know, all across the state, you know, and in the city, right? Joe said this, there was an article, and it was pretty shocking, actually, that there were more dogs in the city than there were kids, right? We were in a time in San Francisco, like Gainer said, there's like 50,000 Samoans here, right? A lot of folks have been displaced, right? They don't live here no more. Black and brown families, a lot of them are leaving the city, one, because of displacement, but two, because the violence, right? The city just hasn't really been like responsible to be creating safe spaces for like Black and brown people to live in here. You used to go to the mission back in the days, right? Well, but a lot of Latin folks, right? So enrollment has decreased, right? And so trying to get it to right size, it's the work that we're doing today, right? Like I've been on this board 3 years, right? And again, Autumn, transportation, right? $25 million is a lot of money, right? That's a lot of money. Medi-Cal, another 5.5. 5 years, it's another 25, right? But it's a structural deficit that's been occurring, that the school district have built a system, and we're trying to reorganize, right? And it's going to take everyone's help. It's going to take your help. It's going to take, you know, probably bringing on a new superintendent, shifting policies around, right? And, you know, I'm excited to be working with CDE, with Elliot and those guys, learning from them, you know, and we learned from those guys that we have a funding or a formula in our school system that is like four-streamed, right? So we have way to student formula, MTSS, and two others, right? Which the expert said it's confusing, right? So the recommendation is to merge all of them so that it is in alignment with one. So that way we could streamline it into what he was saying, you know, LCFF. These are like a lot of structural issues. You know, we can go on about the science on this stuff, but this stuff has been occurring for over years, and we're now inheriting a lot of that.
Great, thank you. Dennis, other questions from the chat?
It's 8:11, Frank, you said 10 minutes.
Well, this would be one for okay. Joel, and is the power to choose new board members in the hands of the mayor safer than leaving it in the hands of the original three members to run the school board? What does everyone think?
Well, I think it's important to note that the school board is not entirely in the hands of the mayor. Yes, the mayor will appoint any replacements of people who are recalled, but those people have to stand for election just a few months later in November. So the people are going to get to decide who is going to be on the school board. Right now, the people are deciding whether or not to remove the members who have been derelict in their duty. And we're saying, yes, please do that. And we are relying on the mayor to appoint three qualified people who then have to stand for election and face the voters.
Do we have anything else to say on that?
No.
I mean, I think the mayor has stood for our children throughout this pandemic. She has fought for them to be learning in the environments that work best for their families and that are safe for them to learn in. She has done a great job for our families. And if it turns out that she appoints people that we don't like, you know, they're up for a regular election this November, right? So it gets us the better leadership a few months early, but it doesn't mean voters don't get a choice. You know, they're only, they're appointed now, but they get voted on again in November. So no one's losing their voice here.
I thought you were going to go someplace and get some.
I know, I just wanted to be homeless, tired, sweat, cold. Yeah,
I thought, well, what?
There's another question.
Okay, go ahead.
How much money is being spent in this recall election? What is it costing and from what budget?
Probably for us, huh?
Okay, go ahead.
So the current estimate is that this election will cost between $8 and $12 million total. There's also the 8017 primary and the assessor recorder's election on the same ballot. So it's not clear exactly how that will be divided up between the school board recall and the other issues. There's legislation pending with the Board of Supervisors right now to have the city just cover the cost of the entire election and not send any of that to the school district. So it's extremely likely to pass. And so the money is almost certainly going to come from the city budget.
Okay. Another question from Hoya Padmanek says, is there a reason Commissioner Maliga sends his child to a private school? Is this a statement against public schools?
I'm not answering that question. I continuously ask people to keep families and kids out of this political process. And so I'm not gonna put my son in the middle of this conversation, with all due respect.
Fair. Dennis, you have one more question?
We're gonna
move on.
What are Autumn and Joel's qualifications to make judgments of education? I think recall based on political differences, trying to avoid people's vote. Wait till November, this smells bad.
So I think it's pretty obvious even to the casual observer that there are issues with the school board if you've watched any school board meeting whatsoever. Or if you look at their record, there has been article after article in the press about how the school board has handled reopening and other issues at a time when all school boards were under pressure. That said, you know, I come from a family that was in education. My mom was a school administrator. I know what it looks like when a school district is well run. And it drives me nuts when it isn't, because the kids get hurt.
And I think anyone can be qualified to care about our city and the future of our city. Because if we don't have good public schools, we're not going to have a good city. Because people are going to leave San Francisco, or those who can stay are going to go to private school and then not be invested in the public schools. And that only hurts our city. So I think the qualification to talk about this is caring about our city and wanting to keep and retain families in San Francisco.
Okay, thank you very much. Thank you for all the panelists on the debate. We're now going to hear from Joaquin Torres, candidate for assessor. He was appointed and is now the current assessor recorder for City of San Francisco. Again, thank you all of you. We appreciate it.
Well, okay. Good evening, everyone. It's a pleasure to be with you. My name is Joaquin Torres, and I am the assessor recorder for the City and County of San Francisco. I am running for election twice next year, the first to fulfill the term that I was appointed to. And that election does take place, as you just heard, on February 15th next year. And then the second election will happen again in November, which I do plan to run for. Currently, I am officially running unopposed for this seat. And I'm very grateful for that opportunity to be able to run unopposed, to focus on my work, and to also to get my message out to voters. If there is anything I think that we have learned from this pandemic, it is that in order for government to succeed, it has to do things differently. It has to be present with the people that it's serving, it has to be flexible to meet their needs, and it has to meet people where it's at. That is the ethos that I brought to my work since I began my career here in San Francisco back in 2009. I started from the ground and worked my way up. I started in neighborhood services under then Mayor Gavin Newsom. I then led the Office of Neighborhood Services under the late Mayor Ed Lee, and then was asked to take on two very important initiatives for the city. One, to help us combat against the recession and provide equity to our small businesses and our neighborhoods, to lead a neighborhood economic development project and initiative called Invest in Neighborhoods, making sure that we could coordinate city resources, not exist in silos, and deliver where needs were being real, where needs were being expressed through a variety of resources and policies and programs and access. Government has to be accessible. And then secondarily, I was also asked to chair the Public Housing Authority Commission at a time when it was desperately in need of reform. And I was part of a group of commissioners who were appointed to lead those reform efforts. And that has led to a national best practice model that leveraged investments in public housing that serve families, those with disabilities, and seniors to ensure that we could rehabilitate nearly 3,400 public housing units, provide the services wraparound in those communities by culturally competent professionals, and lead an overall $2 billion project to change the nature of how we view public housing residents as San Franciscans in our city. I'm very, very proud of the work of both of those efforts. And then I was lucky enough to lead both the Office of Economic Development, not only for prior to the pandemic, but throughout it, making sure once again that we were accessible, that we were going above and beyond and serving the people of the city. I think those attributes and my track record are why Mayor Breed appointed me in February of this year to take on this office and succeed Carmen Chu as the assessor recorder. I hit the ground running. I expanded on programs that my predecessor began, such as the Family Well Series, making it available online and in language, in Spanish and Chinese, for families to make sure that they could access our resources, working in the diversity of our communities, so they could learn about Proposition 19 and how that might affect them as homeowners, to making sure they understand about financial empowerment classes that were available in the southeast part of our city to the benefit of Latino families, African-American families, and API and Samoan families, making sure that we could deliver resources to people where they were at in the midst of this ever-changing pandemic. And then finally, I finally launched our In the Neighborhood series to make sure that once again, in person, physically, I could be at our libraries and communities. I started in the Bayview, and I'll be working my way through the southeast part of the city in the coming year. And then the basic fundamentals. The assessor is responsible for one of the most secure and stable sources of funding in our city. And we know that stable and secure is important during times of crisis, the one that we have just gone through and continue to move through. 28% of our $13.1 billion budget is because of the resources that we provide. Property taxes and those resources, ensuring that those dollars get into our general fund for the services that we know have been so important. Our infrastructure, our roads, our parks, and yes, our schools. Support for small businesses, community testing to care programs, vaccination programs, racial equity programs. All of those, I make sure that I and my staff have at the top of our mind when we are delivering excellent customer service, doing our valuations, fighting for every dollar, and making sure that people are paying their fair share when it comes to the work that we have to do guided by the state constitution here in California. Again, the audit program that we pursue makes sure that in transfer taxes, we're leaving no dollars on the table. Tens of millions of dollars we've been able to ensure are secure. Again, making sure that people know fairness and equity and accuracy are driving our work so that our city can succeed. I'm very much looking forward to the work ahead. Most specifically, one of my passion projects just got some fuel because of Governor Newsom's signature making AB 1466 into law that allows me to do two things. The first one, removing restrictive and discriminatory language from covenants and deeds. Our city looks the way it does for a reason, and that's because of the past practices of individuals and organizations and their practice of exclusion that primarily impacted communities of color and religious communities. No Chinese, No Blacks allowed, no Latinos allowed, no Jews allowed. That language is a stench that we want to remove from our documentation, while at the same time making sure that we have a clear understanding of how that history has affected us and what we look like today here in the city and county of San Francisco, so that we can be better and do better for the people of the city and county of San Francisco. That's who I am. That's who I've been in my city service. I want to continue doing that work for all of you and making sure that you know that you have someone that keeps those values and those principles in mind of making sure that these funds, this level of service, this level of accessibility is something that makes our city better. So I wanted to be present with all of you tonight, even though I'm running unopposed, so that you could hear from me directly about my vision for the office and how I view why it's so important, this role in serving our city. Thank you.
Great. Thank you very much. We do have a couple questions. Sure. And I'm going to kick off one. These are two related questions. We understand that property taxes are likely to go down in San Francisco because of the pandemic in the next year. How much do you do you agree with that? And how much of a hit do you think we will get from that?
Well, it's not clear right now because we're in the process of working through the appeals, something that we were expecting. There are hundreds of more appeals this year than there were last year, both on the commercial and residential property side of the house. Those have already moved past the informal review process where we kind of look and work on these issues. And those are now moving to the Assessment Appeals Board, where there is going to be a process of moving through all of them to determine, is a property really worth only a dollar, or is it worth the tens of millions of dollars that we very accurately valued before it was contested and moved on to the Appeals Board. So it remains to be seen. There's budgeting that takes place. To give you a kind of example of the dollar amounts, it's probably been like $25 million in the past where we think that we might be losing based on the appeals process. But this year is a little bit different. We might see an increase there. We just don't know yet until we go through that process.
Great. Another question said, what will you do when you reassess the city at a lower value? You kind of answered that, but how will this limit general obligation bonds over the next 5 years if the reassessment is lower?
So we don't know yet. We haven't yet had the conversation with our bond ratings partners where the city comes together, the treasurer, the treasurer and tax collector, the controller in our office to have that conversation. And we want to make sure that we're delivering and making sure that people know how responsible we are in terms of our fiscal resources, how we are doing our work, how we reappropriate those resources to ensure that people know when they invest in San Francisco, it's a good bet. With Carmen Chu as a city administrator, with Jose Cisneros as our treasurer, humbly I say with me as our assessor recorder, and Ben Rosenfield as our city controller, and Lyndon Breed as our mayor, we are in a very, very good place in terms of ensuring that we can maintain a very, very strong bond rating. There may be some impacts, we shall see. Again, we don't know until we have those conversations.
Thank you. There's one question at the end. It says, it's interesting that there are more appeals on residential properties. It sure seems like home prices have risen in the past year, right?
Well, some people want to roll the dice. They want to go before the Assessment Appeals Board to see if they can contest the value that we assessed on their properties. The market data has shown that we've seen a stable, if not an increase, in property tax values. And what some people may not know, because it can and does get very complicated, is that the temporary reductions that we have the discretion to provide via the state constitution and the laws are based on market value and dipping below what's called the base year factor, the base year value of a property. So for example, properties that may have been acquired sooner may be up for value for reevaluation and reassessment, depending on what the market is saying, the values have either stayed steady or dipped. We're not really seeing that. The only case in which we've seen those dips that required us and gave us reason to move forward on reassessments were on condominiums because of the very particular nature of shared common spaces, condominiums in the market, and the market data showed that there was a clear dip on those properties. In other ones, and again, only within a very specific time period, those most recently purchased, which have a higher base year value. Those who were purchased a long time ago, the market has not changed so dramatically that it's gone below those base year values. So again, complicated, many layers, but I think that's why you see some people willing to come forward and say, I challenge why these are increasing in this moment in time. I challenge that my market value has actually increased.
Okay, one last question, and I'll ask you to confine your answer to 1 minute. And this is, for those who are trying to, oh, it keeps jumping up and down, sorry. For those who are trying to do financial planning for our future, how do we manage the increased values against the needs of people knowing what property tag is, what property taxes will be during retirement years?
Well, the state law that governs the work that we do does not provide a very clear answer for that, unfortunately. The only protections that we have, especially for those who are on limited incomes and seniors who are in their homes, is the cap that Proposition 13 has placed on your property, where that value cannot increase by more than 2%, no more than 2% on an annual basis, which limits the amount that your property taxes can be increased. Again, they're capping it based on that 2% increase, irrespective of what the true value of your home may be. So if you purchased a home, let's say one of you were lucky enough to purchase your home for $250,000 or $350,000 or less back in the day, imagine what the actual price of that, the value of that property is today, over $1 million, most likely. Depending on where you are, but most likely based on the average price of homes throughout the city and county of San Francisco, your annual property taxes have not increased by more than 2% per year. So just something to keep in mind in terms of that leveling. But in terms of limited incomes, the ability to weather those even minimal increases. My mom lives in a affordable housing development where she sees her rent increasing year after year. It takes a hit on her as well, and it's a struggle. So I understand the concern, but those are the only caps and protections that are provided by the state right now.
Understood. Thank you very much. And thank you, everyone, for joining us today. We greatly appreciate it. I thought that this is a very useful discussion. Thanks again.
Thank you all so much.